The first gift was small enough to pass as polite, a thin silver bracelet left on my desk after a late meeting, tucked under a folder like it belonged there. He said it was a thank you for the extra hours, for the discretion, for having his back. I wore it once because refusing felt rude and accepting felt harmless. That was the lie. The second gift arrived during a conference, upgraded hotel room, higher floor, better view. He called it efficiency. The third gift came with a look that lingered too long and a hand on my shoulder that stayed a second past normal. By then, the gifts weren't objects anymore. They were a record. Proof. Each one said I owed him something I hadn't agreed to give. When I finally tried to return them, I learned how fast generosity can turn into ownership. I learned how cruelty wears a professional smile. And I learned that in some workplaces, gifts aren't gifts at all. They're receipts. I met him during a reorganization year, the kind that pretends to be about efficiency, but is really about control. He was married. Everyone knew it, and he liked that it was known. It gave him a sheen of respectability, as if a ring could function as character reference. He was senior leadership, not the top, but close enough that people spoke his name carefully. I reported into him indirectly, which is how these things usually start. Enough distance to deny, enough proximity to influence. I had been in the company long enough to recognize the rhythm of power. He watched meetings the way chess players watch boards, eyes flicking to reactions rather than slides. He noticed who spoke and who hesitated. When he focused on me, it felt flattering at first. I was good at my job. I carried projects that had stalled. I didn't panic under pressure. Attention from someone like him felt like recognition finally catching up. The bracelet appeared after a week where I'd smoothed over a crisis he'd created, a rushed decision, a budget oversight, the usual. I stayed late, made calls, reframed the damage. He thanked me in front of others, then thanked me again privately. The bracelet came the next morning. No card, no explanation. Just his assistant's handwriting on a sticky note telling me he'd left something for me. I should have returned it immediately. That's the clean version of the story people like, the decisive moment. But workplaces don't run on clean moments. They run on awkward pauses and calculations. Returning it meant making a scene. Accepting it meant keeping the peace. I chose peace. I told myself it was a thank you gift, nothing more. I wore it once to signal gratitude, then left it in a drawer. After that, he started finding reasons to talk to me alone. Reviews that didn't require privacy, strategy chats that drifted. He never said anything explicit. He didn't need to. He framed everything as mentorship. He talked about my potential, my trajectory, how women like me needed advocates at his level. The implication hovered without landing. The hotel upgrade happened at a conference in Vienna. I checked in and the receptionist smiled differently, as if I'd done something impressive. I hadn't. He had. He texted me later, casual, asking if the room was comfortable. I said thank you. I added a smiley face because I was trying to keep it light, professional, contained. He replied with a comment about the view and how hard I worked. That night, I didn't sleep well. The room felt less like a perk and more like a stage I hadn't auditioned for. I began to notice patterns I'd ignored before, how gifts flowed in one direction, how his praise sharpened when we were alone, how his tone cooled when I asserted a boundary that was too clear. He never crossed a line you could circle in red. He skated along the edge, letting momentum do the work. The gifts escalated because they always do. A watch for my birthday, expensive enough to make my stomach drop. Tickets to a show I'd mentioned once in passing. Each time he framed it as generosity. Each time the weight increased. People noticed. They joked. They asked how I'd gotten so lucky. I laughed along because pushing back would have meant explaining something I wasn't ready to name. He began referencing the gifts in conversation, not directly, but with reminders. He mentioned the watch during a performance review. He asked if the tickets had been worth it when assigning me a new project. Gratitude became expectation. Expectation became leverage. The first time I tried to return something, it was the bracelet. I brought it to his office, heart racing, rehearsed lines evaporating as soon as I saw him. I said it was too much, that I appreciated it but couldn't accept. He smiled like I'd misunderstood a joke. He said it would hurt his feelings. He said it was already mine. He said refusing made things awkward. I left with the bracelet still in my hand and a new understanding in my chest, that my discomfort was less important than his narrative, that politeness could be weaponized, that saying no once didn't end anything. After that, the cruelty started seeping in, subtle at first, feedback that cut deeper than necessary, deadlines that shifted without warning. He questioned my judgment in meetings, lightly, with a laugh that invited others to join. When I looked confused, he'd remind me of how much he'd invested in me. Invested. The word landed like a claim. I started documenting things quietly. Dates, comments, gifts. I didn't know what I was collecting yet, only that I needed a record outside my body. At the same time, I kept performing. That's the complicity no one likes to admit. I did my job well. I met expectations. I didn't confront him publicly. Survival looks cooperative from the outside. The breaking point came during a business trip to Brussels. Another upgrade, another expectation. He implied, without saying it, that my loyalty would be rewarded. When I didn't play along, his tone shifted entirely. He reminded me of my position. He reminded me of the gifts. He asked what I thought people would say if they knew. That night, I packed the gifts into my suitcase like evidence. The watch, the bracelet, the tickets, unused. The next morning, I put them on his desk before anyone arrived. I left a note thanking him and stating clearly that I was returning them. Clear is dangerous. Clear invites retaliation. He didn't confront me immediately. That was the worst part. The silence stretched, heavy and deliberate. When he finally did, it was in the form of a meeting invite with no agenda. He was calm. He was cold. He said I'd embarrassed him. He said I was ungrateful. He said returning the gifts made me look unstable. From that point on, the ground shifted beneath me. Projects were reassigned. My access narrowed. He questioned my performance formally now, documenting things that had never been issues. When I pushed back, he implied I was overreacting, that I'd misinterpreted his kindness, that I was making things personal. I went to HR with my notes and my returned gifts. I spoke carefully, sticking to facts, describing patterns without emotion. They listened. They nodded. They asked if he'd ever explicitly said anything inappropriate. I said no. They asked if I'd ever told him to stop. I said yes, eventually. They asked why I'd accepted the gifts in the first place. The investigation went nowhere. He was warned about optics. I was advised to be mindful of perceptions. That was the language. Perceptions. Optics. As if the problem was how it looked, not how it felt. I left the company 6 months later. Officially, it was my choice. Unofficially, the walls had closed in. He stayed. His reputation survived. Mine followed me quietly, in the form of references that praised my work but noted I was sensitive. I still think about that bracelet sometimes. How small it was. How heavy it became. Gifts can feel like generosity until you realize they come with strings you never agreed to hold. I learned that power doesn't need to touch you to own a part of your story. And I learned that returning a gift doesn't always return the cost. Some things stay with you long after the objects are gone.